Well, welcome. Last week, we started a series called The Original Joe. We've been looking at Joseph from the book of Genesis. Joseph, who really, from Genesis 37 to the end of the book, chapter 50, he dominates the narrative. Now, he is a very catalytic and important figure in the history of Genesis. We see that he was the great-grandson of Abraham, who was the first man that God kind of called to start a new nation through whom he would reveal himself, a nation through whom he would bring the Messiah, a nation through whom the world would be blessed. But Joseph was a catalytic character that helped transition Abraham's family from the land of Canaan, that was the promise, but they weren't in the promise yet, to move them into Egypt to begin the fulfillment of God's eternal promise to them. Now, we fast forward the story, and we can see that this promise came true, that through the nation of Israel, they were in the land of Egypt as slaves for 400 years. Moses showed up and brought them out. They spent time in the desert. Then they ended up in the land of promise. But how did that all begin? How did that shift begin? Well, it was through the life of Joseph that God worked, and he began to accomplish his purposes. Now, last week, we talked about Joseph in general. We kind of told his story from the broad picture, and we learned a couple of things. If you missed that, it's a really foundational sermon for the whole series. I'd encourage you to go to the website, betheltab.ca, and listen to it to get a bit of a foundation and background to everything that's going on. But we saw that he was the spoiled youngest brother. He was daddy's favorite. He got the coat of many colors. He got the ornate robe that meant he didn't have to work like his brothers. He didn't have to do all the hard work. He was just the spy on his brothers who would go back to daddy and tell him all the bad things that his brothers did. So his brothers hated him. They disliked him very much. But we saw Joseph go through a series of events, trials and suffering and temptation and dealing with all kinds of circumstances to all of a sudden find himself second in command of all of Egypt, in a position to save the lives of his brothers. Now, that didn't happen overnight. It was a 13-year span. And through it all, Joseph kept two very important truths in mind that we also need to remember. One, he believed that God was with him, even in the times when it didn't feel like it. And two, he believed that God had a greater purpose for his life than he knew at the time. These are very important truths that we need to carry through this entire series. And he really lived out what Romans 8:28 said, "We know that in all things, God works for the good of those who love him and have been called according to his purpose." And even the darkest moments of Joseph's journey were transformed into eventually what would save him and save his family and preserve the line of Christ and preserve the promise of God. So, how did he learn this would happen? How did his journey begin? Today we're going to look at Joseph the dreamer. Joseph the dreamer. Genesis chapter 37, verses 5 to 11. Joseph had a dream, and when he told it to his brothers, they hated him all the more. He said to them, "Listen to this dream I had. We were binding sheaves of grain out in the field when suddenly my sheaf rose and stood upright while your sheaves gathered around mine and bowed down to it." His brothers said to him, "Do you intend to reign over us? Will you actually rule us?" And they hated him all the more because of his dream and what he had said. Then he had another dream, and he told it to his brothers. "Listen," he said, "I had another dream, and this time the sun and moon and 11 stars were bowing down to me." When he told his father as well as his brothers, his father rebuked him and said, "What is this dream you had? Will your mother and I and your brothers actually come and bow down to you on the ground before you?" His brothers were jealous of him, but his father kept the matter in mind. Are you a dreamer? I don't know about you. Sometimes dreams are weird and wacky, aren't they? Sometimes they just, what was that? What kind of pizza did I eat last night before bed that would cause me to dream this dream? Scientists aren't even sure really exactly where dreams come from and why we have them. We have different sleep cycles as we go through the night. One of the sleep cycles, rapid eye movement, REM sleep, that's when we typically have our dreams. Our eyes are moving really fast, and one of the reasons why we might see pictures. But we're not 100% sure where they come from, why we have them. It's something to do with our subconscious, our unconscious mind is doing this. My 3-year-old daughter will often come to me and start telling me a story of something that happened to her. And the story starts very normal and natural. I was riding my bike, or I was at the park, and then suddenly a dragon showed up, and he gave me pizza, and we went on a car ride together. And then Reuben comes in and says, "Emmeline, did that happen to you in a dream?" She goes, "Yeah." But she just tells me these stories that clearly are dreams, and it's amazing to hear that from my kids and how they understand them. But sometimes, even though many dreams seem really random, sometimes dreams don't seem so random. Sometimes they connect us to real-life events. Sometimes we see images of people we know. Sometimes they disturb us in a way so that the dream actually sticks with us, and we wonder if there's anything more to it than just something random. In Victoria, we had a few years around when our first child was born where a lot of people were having babies. And there was also a collection of dreams about children that were coming true. We had a family friend who had a dream that my sister-in-law was going to be pregnant and have a child, and within a couple of weeks, she found out she was pregnant. We had a little girl in our church, I think she was 3 or 4, and she had 3 brothers and desperately wanted a baby sister. And one morning, she came to her mommy and said, "Mommy, last night I had a dream that I was going to have a baby sister." And mommy hadn't told the kids yet that she was pregnant, but she didn't know that it was going to be a baby girl, but it was. So sometimes dreams, could these be coincidences? Maybe. Could they be God? Probably. I believe God can and still will speak to us through dreams. Sometimes dreams are just random, but sometimes God still uses them to talk to us. My wife doesn't believe me, but I had a dream about her. And, there she is. She heard me talking about her. This happened. I was 10 years old, and I had a dream about holding the 2 hands of a beautiful brunette, and we were spinning around, and there were lights in the background. So fast forward, Rebecca and I had met, we were hanging out with friends, and one of the things that we did for fun once in a while is we would go take swing dancing lessons at this place in Victoria. And swing dancing is a great dance for Christians because you stand apart. There's lots of room for Bibles in between you. And but here we are taking these swing dances, and I'm dancing with different friends, and the lessons you're supposed to rotate around. And anyways, later on, Rebecca and I are dancing together, and I'm holding her 2 hands, and we're spinning around the room, and there's lights all around the edges. The next day, I asked her out, and only 5 breakups later, we got engaged. And we've been married 7.5 years, so that's another story. But I believe I had a dream about her as a young man, and it stuck with me for a long time. Now, I just make it a habit. If I see someone in my dreams, God put someone in there, I'll pray for them. But it was an ancient belief back in Joseph's day. It was very common to believe that a dream came from the gods to show us something that they were up to, something that might happen, the activity of the gods. So it wasn't surprising culturally to have a dream and believe that had come from God in this context. Now, Joseph's father kept it in mind because he thought, I don't really like this dream, but maybe it is something God is doing. And we need to remember too that God never sleeps. God never takes a break. So he can actually work on us and speak to us and work on our character and speak to our hearts even while we sleep. I believe he does that. So Joseph had this dream. I believe he thought it had something to it, but he had no idea how it would happen. He had no idea how he would go from a 17-year-old spoiled kid with a fancy coat to becoming this person who would have his brothers and his parents actually bow down to him. He certainly would have never guessed that it would be a sequence of events where he'd be betrayed by his brothers, be sold into slavery, find himself in jail, and suddenly be in Pharaoh's palace. He never would have guessed that. Now, we all have dreams. I'm not talking now about the dreams we have while we sleep. Some of us have dreams about goals, things that we want to accomplish, things that we want to see happen in our lives or through our lives, places we want to go, experience we want to have. We all have dreams, am I right? Things that we want to happen, but we don't have them yet. So whether it's a dream you have in your sleep or your dream you just have in your heart, we all have them. I think some people think that the dream is the next step. I'm right here and the fulfillment of my dream is the next step. But the truth is, dreams are often the 10th or the 100th or the 1,000th step away. The fulfillment of that dream is still a long ways away, and as a consequence of thinking it should be just the next step, we will actually reject the opportunities God puts right in front of us, which will help put together that dream in the future. See, for Joseph, his dream was not to go from a spoiled 17-year-old to suddenly the second in command of all of Egypt, but God had to take him on a journey. And Joseph was willing in every step of the way to take that step. He didn't say, hey, this isn't my dream. What's up with this? He said, no, I may be in slavery. This isn't the fulfillment of my dream, but I'm going to make the most of where I am right now and wait for God to tell me it's time for the next step. We can't reject the things that are happening in our lives. We need to see them as potentially the method that God is going to use to take us to the next step of the journey toward the fulfillment of the dream he has given us. So Joseph gave up control of how his dreams would come true, and he spent his efforts and his energy and his focus in the place where he was, waiting for God to give him the go-ahead for the next step. I want to talk about the picture and the pieces. My son Reuben turned 5 yesterday, and one of his favorite things is Lego. This is one of his Lego sets. It's a 3-in-1. You can make a helicopter, a plane, or a boat. And he, oh, there's Reuben. Hey, buddy. You wanted to hear this part, didn't you? Yeah. You can make a plane, a helicopter, and Reuben loves Lego. We got him his first Lego sets at Christmas time. And very quickly, he learned how to follow the instructions and put them together all by himself. He got some birthday money yesterday. And we're going shopping this week, aren't we, buddy? We're going to get some more Lego? That's right. Yeah, so he's pumped about Lego. And so when you get the Lego box, what you see is the picture on the front is the completed project. This is the picture you get. But what happens when you open the box? You get the pieces. And it's hard to even imagine sometimes how this set of pieces is going to turn into a helicopter. Like you go, what is this? Now, let me ask you something about Lego. What do we love about Lego? Do we love Lego because the helicopter is so incredible? I mean, if you bought this helicopter as a toy, you'd be significantly disappointed because really, like it's so chunky. And what are those bumps all over it? And as soon as I drop it, it smashes into pieces. Like, there are much nicer helicopters you can buy. But why do we love Lego so much? We love it for the process. We love it because when we pull it out, we get the pieces, and we get to be a part of taking the pieces and turning it into the picture. And sometimes we think that our dreams should go straight from picture straight to reality. We should pull it straight out of the box. But you know what? As I used to work in university ministry, and it is a very true fact that the students who have to work their butts off to pay for their own school appreciate it more. You know, those of you in here who have been a church, part of this church for a long time, and you've given your blood, sweat, and tears, you've volunteered, you've been giving tithes and offerings for years, you give all of yourself to this church, you guys take ownership. When there's a problem, you step in instead of stepping out. When there's challenges, and there's been challenges in the history of this church, you've stuck around because you've been a part of the process. You appreciate it so much more. And that's the same with our dreams. See, God is not inviting us when he gives us dreams. He's not inviting us to a destination. He's inviting us into a process and a partnership with him to put the pieces together so that together we can see the whole picture. Joseph could have never gone from spoiled 17-year-old to ruler of Egypt just like that. He needed to go through a process. Now, we might have a picture in our minds. We need to be willing to go through step by step, piece by piece. You see, God has invited us into his great project. His project is this, heaven on earth. And he's invited us through the Lord's Prayer, God, let your kingdom come, let your will be done on earth as it is in heaven. And our project while we are on this side of eternity is to work together to make earth look as much like heaven as possible and invite others in. That's the picture. And we are the pieces. As we come together, that happens more and more. Joseph had to go through many things to put the pieces together. He had to learn how to start with nothing. He had to learn how to deal with rejection. He had to learn how to serve as a slave. He learned how to manage a household and other workers. He learned how to resist temptation. He learned how to be content in every circumstance. He learned how to be trustworthy. He learned how to manage high levels of responsibility. And he learned how to trust God no matter what was going on. And guess what? He learned those things in slavery and in prison. It wasn't anything near the fulfillment of his dream. It wasn't anything near the picture. But he knew that God was working for his good, and he was going to put the pieces together. Piece by piece, the dream would come together. Now, Joseph was the master of dreams. Now, when he went and talked to his brothers about his dreams, they weren't too thrilled. They hated him all the more, the scripture says, and it repeats that several times. Anytime the scriptures repeat something, it's emphasizing the point. His brothers really hated him. So he came to them and told them this dream, and then he showed up. His father sent him out to go check on his brothers as they were working out in the fields. And in Genesis chapter 37, verse 19, they see him coming in the distance, and they say, "Here comes that dreamer." Now, the irony is the words that are used in the Hebrew for that dreamer literally means master of dreams. Here comes the master of dreams. Now, they were being sarcastic. They were mocking him. But Joseph truly did have a gift, and he used it later. He received dreams from the Lord, but he was also able to interpret them through God's Spirit to be master of dreams. Now, God gave Pharaoh a pair of dreams, just like he gave Joseph a pair of dreams. In Pharaoh's dreams, we learn in Genesis 41, he had a dream where he saw seven fat and healthy cows coming out of the Nile River, followed by seven thin and ugly cows who came out and they ate the healthy cows. Then he saw seven heads of grain that were healthy and good, and then he saw seven dying, scorched heads of grain that came and ate the healthy ones. Pharaoh couldn't interpret it. He didn't know what it means. All of his wise men and counselors didn't know what it means. And so Joseph was sent for because he had gained a reputation for being the master of dreams. So he comes to Pharaoh in Genesis 41, 15 to 16. Pharaoh said to Joseph, "I had a dream and no one can interpret it. But I have heard it said of you that when you hear a dream, you can interpret it." "I cannot do it," Joseph replied to Pharaoh, "but God will give Pharaoh the answer he desires." When Pharaoh told Joseph about his dreams, Joseph said this in verse 25. "Then Joseph said to Pharaoh, 'The dreams of Pharaoh are one and the same. God has revealed to Pharaoh what he is about to do. The seven good cows are 7 years. The seven good heads of grain are 7 years. It is one and the same dream. The seven lean, ugly cows that came up afterward are 7 years, and so are the seven worthless heads of grain scorched by the east wind. They are 7 years of famine." So Joseph, as he interpreted this, suggested to Pharaoh that he should put somebody in place to manage a food collection and distribution program. And Pharaoh says this in verse 37, "The plan seemed good to Pharaoh and all his officials. So Pharaoh asked them, 'Can we find anyone like this man, one in whom is the Spirit of God?' Then Pharaoh said to Joseph, 'Since God has made all this known to you, there is no one so discerning and wise as you. You shall be in charge of my palace, and all my people are submit to your orders.'" Do you think this is the way Joseph thought it would go down? Do you think this is the way Joseph thought his picture would come into reality? He never could have guessed. He never could have guessed. But he's able to give up control of God to God about how it would happen, and he was just willing to go through the process and be prepared for the time that it came. But the dream wasn't completely fulfilled until years later when this food distribution program is going on and Joseph's brothers show up. Not recognizing him, they bowed down before him, submitted to his authority, and asked him to have some food. And it says in chapter 42, verse 9, then he remembered his dreams about them. A couple of quick observations as we move to a close. We're going to have communion together as well. Observation one, as we learned last week, God is always working for the good of those who love him and are called according to his purposes, which is exactly what he was doing for Joseph and for his family. But even when people who don't love God are near those who do, they reap the benefit of God's good work. Even when people who don't love God are near those who do, Pharaoh, they reap the benefit of God's good work. See, I believe that the church should be positioning itself in its community in such a way that as God blasts us with his blessing, people around us become collaterally blessed. See, God was trying to work through Joseph for Joseph and his family, but Pharaoh just happened to get in the way. Egypt just happened to get in the way. Who can we get near to experience the blessing of God? Matthew 5 says that we should let our light shine before others so that they will glorify our Father in heaven. Even Pharaoh looked and saw Joseph. The Spirit of God is in him. Look what God is doing in him. That's incredible. And he glorified God through this situation. You see, our dreams aren't just for us. Our dreams aren't just for us to reap personal benefit from, but our dreams are so that through us, the world can be blessed. Observation number two. In order for Joseph to see his own dreams come true, he had to first help someone else's dream come true. He had to first help someone else's dream come true. I think part of seeing our own dreams come true is to stop focusing on our dreams coming true. And instead of saying, that's not my dream, start saying, hey, what's your dream? What's in your heart? How can I serve you? See, Joseph realized that some of the pieces that he had fit into somebody else's picture. And as a consequence of him sharing the pieces of his life in someone else's picture, his picture became to become more in focus. Some of the pieces you and I have fit the picture of our neighbor, of our coworker, of the person who doesn't know the Lord. And as we serve their dreams, as we love them, as we selflessly sacrifice of ourselves and give ourselves away, that's when our picture comes into focus. Joseph first had to help someone else's dream come true before his dream came true. If you're on the communion team this morning, you can head to the foyer and begin to prepare yourself. Now, the author of Joseph's story, writing this history, we believe to be Moses. And Moses is a masterful writer, and I want to illuminate something to you that isn't necessarily apparent as we just read the text. In Pharaoh's dream, he described ugly cows and good cows, ugly grain and good grain. And the word ugly there can also just be translated evil. So Pharaoh's dreams are a contrast between good and evil. And Joseph comes and he says, I can't discern between good and evil for you, but God can. God is the one who teaches us the difference between what is good and what is evil, what is right and what is wrong. And it's him who gives the interpretation. It's him who gives the discernment for us. Now, his able to discern dreams was really God-given. It was really God helping him do that. Now, let me ask you, who else in the book of Genesis had challenges with the knowledge of good and evil? Anybody? Say it out loud. I heard it. Adam and Eve. Yeah. Adam and Eve. They ate of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. Now they, in their ambition, tried to discern and learn about good and evil themselves. By contrast, Joseph, in his humility, said, no, it's God who discerns the knowledge of good and evil. He is the source of that. I cannot do that on my own. But Moses is clearly contrasting Adam and Joseph. If you look at this, just as Adam is God's appointed ruler of the earth in the first couple chapters of Genesis, so Joseph is Pharaoh's appointed ruler of Egypt. Adam is made in God's image and given God's authority to rule over the land, And so Joseph is given the signet ring, the authority of Pharaoh, and appointed to rule the land. Just as God provided a wife for Adam, so Pharaoh provided a wife for Joseph. But unlike Adam, Joseph gives God the glory and does not try to take the knowledge of good and evil for himself. You know, we read about Joseph and we see something amazing, that he became this pinnacle human being, this incredible example. And that's exactly what Moses is trying to do, to show us in Joseph's life, that he is actually the ultimate man. That he shows us what humanity is capable of, what the image of God is capable of, what a spirit-filled person can do, and what we can represent. God has given us rulership of the earth. God has told us to take care of this world. God has told us to create. God has told us to administrate. And Joseph rises up and shows us what humanity can do. The name Adam just means man, just means human being. He's a representative for us. So Joseph points back to Adam, but Joseph also points forward to the final Adam. We read in 1 Corinthians 15, 21-22, "Since death came through a man, the resurrection of death comes through a man. For as in Adam all die, so in Christ all will be made alive." This passage calls Christ the last Adam. See, the Bible portrays many representatives for us. Noah was an Adam. He was the representative of mankind. Joseph was an Adam. He was a representative of humankind. David was an Adam. He was a representative for Israel. He stood before the giant, and his victory became Israel's victory. But the last Adam, you see, sure, through Joseph, his family survived, but the next Pharaoh showed up. He didn't remember Joseph, and he brought death. But through one man, Adam, sin came into the world and death came into the world, and through one man, Jesus, the last Adam, the last representative, the most important, the ultimate, the perfect example of what a human should look like, life was brought to this world. Life was brought to us. And in a moment, we're going to celebrate communion. And it's going to be a celebration and a remembrance that Jesus Christ, the perfect human, gave up his perfection and took sin upon himself to make us perfect in the eyes of God. And that was through his death, his broken body, and his shed blood. Communion team, would you come? Band, you can come back on stage as well.